Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, it's crunch week, isn't it, for the same-sex marriage bill. It's been a long time coming, and you'd think that for many people in our community, this next week is going to be an absolute watershed. After the results came back in the voluntary postal survey, the government wasted no time in getting on with, as they promised, marriage equality laws to be passed by Christmas. The same-sex marriage equality bill last week passed the Australian Senate, and this week it goes to the lower house. The lower house had to sit it out for a week for various reasons, but let's just take what the Prime Minister said at face value. They needed to wait till the Senate had finished its business. I think there were some other things on his mind as well. As we've discussed here on Open House many times, there are concerns in the Christian community, as there are in other faith communities, about things that will be consequential to the change to this definition of marriage. The No case has not quibbled with the need to enact this legislation and to do it quickly. The No case has said the will of the people is very clear. It's a moment where the Australian democracy has had its say, and it was good that we were able to poll people, 61% of those who voted, and that was 80% of people eligible. Pretty good turnout, in fact an astounding turnout. 61% of those said yes to same-sex marriage. But the Parliament, including the Senate, has said no to any additional safeguards. And last week, the Senate had the opportunity to vote on a number of amendments, including one that seemed very straightforward and really quite unexceptional from the Attorney-General George Brandis. And his amendment basically said, in plain language, look, just in case there's any doubt, nothing in this bill will take away from the right of people to hold or express religious views, and nothing in this bill will prevent charities from accessing funding if they have a view about marriage that is different from what the bill now allows, same-sex marriage. I was staggered when that did not get through the Senate, and I still can't quite understand what was going on there. Well, let's hope that the lower house members, our elected representatives who have electorates to face, let's hope that our lower house members deliver a better result. One of those who's sponsoring the bill is Tim Wilson, the Liberal member for Goldstein in Victoria. And Tim, welcome back to Open House.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
It's very good to have you. And I think we spoke with you right at the start of this whole campaign. So here we are virtually at the end of it. How's it going to turn out?
The honest answer is I don't know. We're in uncharted territory for me, where every member of parliament will vote according to their conscience, based on what they believe in, except for the Labor Party. The Labor Party has a binding vote against any change to the bill that's being put before the parliament. They have no choices, and everybody else has a choice. And it's the conversations I've had, there are very disparate views on different amendments, none of which seem to have the support, frankly, that would be necessary to change the bill at this point.
Are you saying that the only reason that amendments can't get up is because the Labor Party has a binding vote?
Well, because the Labor Party has a binding vote, it means that it would need an awful lot of Liberals to move, in fact, basically every Liberal to vote for an amendment. It would also need almost every one of the independents, I suspect, as well. And so that's the challenge, and there are a diversity of views amongst government MPs about the amendments proposed, and we haven't got to the bottom of whether all amendments have been proposed yet. Other ones may come up, and I haven't ruled out introducing some myself, depending on what's put forward by other MPs and the merits and value of them.
What do you have in mind?
Well, as I said, it's dependent on what other people have put forward. But as you know, Stephen, I'm a great stickler for consistency. So I'm interested in looking at what principles can be applied universally for everybody. The Prime Minister today, for instance, flagged an exemption for civil celebrants, which as a broad proposition I have no problem with. But it has to be an exemption that applied for civil celebrants, period. What I won't accept is the standards in law where it says civil celebrants are bound to marry everybody, but in the specific example of same-sex couples, we're going to give them an exemption. If it's a general proposition, I'm quite open to it. But if it's specific to same-sex couples and targeting a very specific section of the community, I can't support that. So this is where the free-flowing nature of the debate is going to be interesting, and also to test the response from many of my colleagues. And I've only scratched the surface, and there really are a diversity of views.
That's really interesting. Yes, the civil celebrant question is quite an interesting one. And the whole question about a conscientious objection on the basis of one category of people is also interesting. Unless, for me, unless it's tied to a religious principle that, you know, the person genuinely holds. I'll give you another example, which some of my former colleagues won't thank me for. In New South Wales, the law currently says non-government schools can discriminate full stop in relation to enrolment of kids. Now, a few years ago, you know, David Marr, who we both know well, raised the issue, well, why should that be allowed? Shouldn't it be only, isn't that hypocritical, because it doesn't actually say on religious grounds? And I think not tying it to any ground of religion actually leaves it just as an open discrimination. I'm not entirely comfortable about that.
And I have very mixed views about this because religious, when we talk about things like religious freedom, it basically includes the freedom, the unlimited freedom of conscience. You can think whatever you want, but that isn't just a limitation to religion. Everybody has the unlimited right to freedom of conscience. Then there's the freedom to manifest that conscience, of which people traditionally do in a religious purpose, but the reality is some people are conscience objectors for reasons outside of religion. And so in a strange way, I'm more comfortable with saying you're allowed, if the law is you're allowed to do whatever you want, it shouldn't be just because you have a faith, then, and we have to accept the standard applicably to everybody. On an additional level, though, I also understand that traditionally it's been anchored in a faith-based position and recognising and respecting it. So that's why I say I have mixed views, and it's going to be very much dependent on how things are proposed, how they're worded, to make a judgment call about how they're going to get responded to.
Yes, that's interesting. Our guest is Tim Wilson, the member for Goldstein, one of the sponsors of the bill that will go through the Parliament this week. And by the end of the week, the legislation will have been changed and then just awaiting royal assent. Australia's marriage laws will have been changed and quite historically so. Tim, one of the reasons we like talking with you is because as a former Human Rights Commissioner, you have, notwithstanding your own personal views on the same-sex marriage issue and, you know, your long-term campaign here. You tried for a long time to bring together the sides in this debate, and you said to us last time you were on the program, the No campaign effectively said, would never give ground. They would never give ground to the point where they'd say, okay, we'll accept same-sex marriage in return for certain safeguards. Had they done that, so here's a hypothetical, had they done that, would they be in a better position? Would Christians concerned about their freedoms be in a better position today?
Oh, resolutely, yes. If you believe that these protections are necessary, I mean, in the end, it's a game of negotiation, and people sometimes have stronger and weaker hands. The reality is that the once you gave up the strength of the hand of trying to define what legislation entered the Parliament, which is what the No campaigners did when they said they want to go to a postal survey or a public vote,
right?
They gave up the strength of their hand and it was left to the Parliament. That's what it's one of the many reasons why I've always opposed a public vote, because it actually means that now the decision is in the hands of the Parliament. We know full well where the preferences of the Parliament generally lie, particularly in the Senate, which is not favourable, I think, to the nuanced conversation that needs to be had. And if there was any doubt about that, that was smashed by the decision of the Australian Labor Party to say we're going to bind against any amendments to the law. Hence why I think it was the wrong strategy. I've always said it's the wrong strategy. People, particularly from some lobby groups, have wanted desperately to have the vote. Well, they've had it. They got, let's be honest about it, got smashed. And now, unfortunately, they've, you know, in many ways, handed their fortune and the interests of many Australians to the Australian Labor Party and the Greens.
Just under 40% is probably not smashed, but we'll leave that there. Look,
respectfully, though, that the reality is, if you in any other election saw somebody only get 38% of the total vote versus 62%, That is ordinarily called a landslide. Now, I have full respect for people who voted against, and they're entitled to their view, but the reality is it's basically the biggest political mandate that has ever been delivered to the Parliament to act in Australian history.
Yeah, on a single issue. So this is why it can't be compared with a general election. Right. But my purpose is not to quibble with that. I'm interested in what you say. Because I know that you do respect the need for human rights to be protected. And you've said to me privately, you've said on this program, human rights comes to us from a very important place. Christians ought to be saying human rights comes to us from God. We're all made in the image of God. Now, if that's what you genuinely believe, and I'm sure that is what you believe, that Christians would say that, then is it time for the yes case to be gracious in winning and say, well, yeah, okay, let's just make sure there's no doubt. So even the Brandis Amendment, which we all know won't be a full protection, but even the Brandis Amendment will be something.
Well, the Brandis Amendment is a complicated one because as a liberal, I'm not a fan of a Bill of Rights. And what this creates is a special protection around religion without any proportionality to the effect on other rights. And I'm very, very nervous about starting to introduce language from international treaties into domestic law. Mm. I'm also very nervous about creating special protection specifically for one right without some sort of consideration of the impact it has on other rights. And that's where it becomes a problem. I know a number of my colleagues have similar concerns from that perspective. Nobody, I think, disputes the objective or the spirit of it. But one of the things I'll be looking at this week, as I know a number of other people will be, is there a way it can be revisited in terms of language? Is there a way that it can be improved? Is there a way it can be narrowed specifically to deal with the issues before us? And is that something that could attract sufficient confidence and support? Again, I'd stress, because the Australian Labor Party has said they will vote against any amendments, it makes it very difficult to do so. But it might get to the point where at least many MPs are prepared to consider supporting the proposal.
Well, a shame on them then if they're revealed as being mean-spirited and political about something that has been a deeply held matter for a lot of Australians both ways. And I mean, I was hoping for and asking for generosity from both sides of this debate from the very beginning. I think you were also.
Correct.
It would be great if we could build a bridge now. Once this is over, Tim, how do we do that?
Well, I think it has to start by having some honest conversations because I think a lot of people who are on the yes side, particularly those who are directly affected by this change in the law, feel that they've been unfairly targeted and victimised as part of this debate. They obviously have a view in favour of changing the law, but we don't traditionally have public votes on matters that can be dealt with by the Parliament on the rights and freedoms of others. And I think there is a bitterness from some sections of the community. But, Stephen, the best thing that Christians can do is live up to the full message of Christ. And I'm not a scholar or an expert, but having gone to an Anglican school and spent years learning about Christ's message of teaching and love and embracing of people, even those who you may believe have sinned, that's the charity that I think a lot of people who are in same-sex relationships or attracted to people of the same sex would love to see. No one has to sanction people's behaviour, but a sense of tolerance and public spirit of mutual respect is what we desperately as a society need to get back to rather than judgment. I also think that Christian communities need to be mindful that certainly perception amongst many people is there's a much greater obsession around what some people do in the privacy of their bedrooms or how they want to celebrate their commitment and love for another human being rather than a lot of other issues, which are equally as important, I would have thought, to the message and teaching of Christ, around refugees, social welfare, around helping the needy. And yet there seems to be a disproportionate focus on people who are dealing with, who have in same-sex relationships, and that maybe embodying and embracing some of those other issues to achieve a greater sense of justice in society would serve a public Christianity better.
Well, there are times to speak and there are times to listen, and that was a time to listen. Tim, thank you very much for being with us. Have a very interesting week. And
I will, Stephen.
Let's hope
and
it turns out well.
I'll be back on again some other time.
That'll be nice. Thank you very much.
You take care.
God bless. Tim Wilson, he's the member for Goldstein in Victoria.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.